اهلا ويلكم تو انذر ايبيسود اوف عرب فويسز ا سينديكيتد راديو توك شو ذات ايرز اون دزنز اوف راديو ستيشنز ان ذا يو اس اند يوروب سينس 2002 This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. During this episode of Arab Voices, episode number 1195, I will have a couple of segments. First, we will listen to the Electronic Intifada newscast, a summary of the latest developments in occupied Palestine, highlighting the Israeli genocide and catastrophic situation in the Gaza Strip and West Bank. During the second segment, I will air a couple of the remarks delivered at the Gaza Tribunal final session held in Istanbul, Turkey in October 2025. We will listen to the remarks of Professor Lana Tatur on Zionist settler colonization and racism in Palestine. Professor Tatur is a senior lecturer in global development at the University of New South Wales and works on settler colonialism, indigeneity, race, citizenship, human rights, and the Middle East with a focus on Palestine and Israel. In her remarks, she addresses the relationship between Zionism, race, and racism as a root cause of genocide in Gaza. Professor Tatur explains in her remarks that racism and racial hierarchization are core to Zionist ideology. She argues that while international human rights organizations acknowledge Israel's genocide and dehumanization of Palestinians, they do not address Zionism as a form of racism or recognize it as the racial ideology driving colonization and genocide. She argues this omission must be rectified. I will also air the remarks of Jeff Halper on crimes against Palestinian people indicting Zionist settler colonialism. In his remarks, Jeff Halper, who is the director of the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions, addresses the need to hold accountable the entire system of Zionist settler colonialism that spans crimes in Gaza. He argues that crimes including genocide, war crimes, and apartheid cannot be addressed only as crimes in themselves, but require dismantling the political and ideological system from which they emerge. Halper explains that settler colonialism follows a pattern of displacing or eliminating the indigenous population, taking control of lands, replacing natives with settlers through Judaization, and normalizing the new country. But let's begin with the Electronic Intifada newscast, a summary of the latest developments in occupied Palestine, presented by Noura Burrows Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada.
This is the Electronic Intifada newscast. I'm Noura Burrows Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 797 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. The Israeli army continues to kill and injure Palestinians across the Gaza Strip in spite of the so-called ceasefire enacted on October 10th. Meanwhile, a brutal winter storm is destroying tent shelters and partially destroyed buildings as the Israelis continue to prevent the entry of prefabricated mobile homes and supplies to repair basic infrastructure. One infant has already died from exposure. Israel killed a child, 16-year-old Zahar Nasser Shamia, on Wednesday, shooting him and then crushing his body underneath a tank in central Gaza, according to the Wafa news agency. A man and a woman were shot and killed by Israeli fire, and a child was shot in the head and injured in the Halawa displacement camp in Jabalia on Wednesday in northern Gaza. Israeli forces shot 10-year-old Bayan in the head, reportedly from a gun mounted on a crane, while she was sheltering with her family in the camp. Journalist Bashir Abu Asher captured a clip of Bayan, in shock and with bandages around her head, being cradled by her grandfather inside an ambulance. The soldiers, the grandfather says, quote, shoot over our heads and we have no place to take shelter. At least 7 Palestinians were killed in separate attacks in northern Gaza on Sunday, December 7th, including a 70-year-old woman and her son, who were reportedly hunted by an Israeli quadcopter drone. The Israeli army claimed that those targeted had crossed the so-called yellow line. Al Jazeera's Hani Mahmoud reported that the woman and her son were chased by a quadcopter drone about half a mile from the yellow line and, quote, left there to bleed to death as the aircraft continued hovering overhead, preventing anyone from reaching them. Mahmoud described the incident as, quote, just one of many violations throughout the day and throughout the past 50 days since the truce came into effect. He added that in areas close to the yellow line, many Palestinians may unwittingly cross the boundary because it is not visible. There are no clear markings or signage to show that this is the ceasefire demarcation that is a restricted and dangerous area, he said. Also on December 7th, a 3-year-old child, Ahed Tariq al-Bayouk, was shot and killed by Israeli forces while she was playing outside of her tent in the Al-Mawasi tent encampment south of Khan Yunus. Reporter Ibrahim Kanan filmed Ahed's grief-stricken family members carrying her little body in a shroud to a nearby clinic. Israel attacked a home in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza on Monday, bombing it with 2 missiles, according to local reports. The United Nations Humanitarian Office reported on Monday that airstrikes, shelling, and gunfire continued across all governorates, including in Jabalia al-Balad and east of Jabalia in north Gaza, in Ashujaiya and Atufah, east and northeast of Gaza City, off the coast of Khan Yunus and in the east and south of the governorate, as well as east and north of Rafah City. Several locations east of the yellow line were affected, the UN said. Reporter Mahmoud Abu Salama recorded footage of Israeli forces firing artillery shells from inside the heart of Jabalia refugee camp on Wednesday, where entire blocks are being leveled during ongoing military operations, according to the local media collective Translating Palestine. Residents report intensified shelling alongside the movement of troops and armored vehicles, signaling a new wave of destruction in an area within the yellow line that is already devastated by months of Israeli occupation, bombardment, and forced displacement, they say. The Gaza government media office stated on Tuesday that in the 60 days since the ceasefire took effect, Israel has committed at least 738 violations, including more than 200 direct shooting incidents, 37 incursions by military vehicles into residential areas, 358 bombings and attacks targeting civilians and their homes, and nearly 140 demolitions of homes, institutions, and civil buildings. On Thursday, Gaza's health ministry reported that more than 380 Palestinians have been killed and 1,000 people have been injured since the so-called ceasefire took effect. Israeli military officials claimed on Tuesday that they are working on using the so-called yellow line, which keeps moving westwards, to designate a permanent new boundary for Gaza. While visiting Israeli occupation soldiers in northern Gaza, in the ruins of Beit Hanun and Jabalia, Israeli Lieutenant General Eyal Zamir said that the yellow line that was demarcated by the Trump administration, quote, is a new border line, serving as a forward defensive line for our communities and a line of operational activity. Zamir added that Israel would hold on to its current military positions, quote, we have operational control over extensive parts of the Gaza Strip, and we will remain on those defensive lines, he said. Earlier this month, Euromed Human Rights Monitor admonished Trump's plan to entrench Israel's ongoing control and rampant encroachment of occupied Gaza. Quote, the consequences of the U.S. plan to support dividing the Gaza Strip into green and red zones separated by a yellow military line carry grave risks, including the effective displacement of Palestinians from their homes and the transformation of large parts of Gaza into closed military zones under the direct control of the Israeli army, Euromed stated. The yellow line, marked by concrete blocks, has not remained fixed but has been pushed beyond the published maps, advancing in some areas by more than 1 kilometer inside the Gaza Strip. It is used to unilaterally redraw lines of military control, gradually expanding areas under direct Israeli authority, placing additional territory under closed military rule, and severely restricting freedom of movement. This practice entrenches de facto annexation and fragments Gaza's territorial unity in clear violation of international law, the group stated. According to information obtained by Euromed, this plan is based on transferring the Palestinian population from the red zone to the green zone through various pressure tactics, which are war crimes. The plan includes the establishment of cities of prefabricated container homes or caravans in the green zone, each housing around 25,000 people within an area of no more than 1 square kilometer and enclosed by walls and checkpoints, Euromed notes. Quote, entry and exit would be permitted only through security screening, effectively converting these sites into overcrowded detention camps that impose severe restrictions on residents' freedom of movement and daily life. The design of these proposed cities mirrors the historical model of ghettos, in which colonial and racist regimes confined specific groups to sealed areas surrounded by walls and guard posts, with movement and resources controlled externally, as seen in Europe during World War II and in other colonial contexts. This system of forced spatial segregation does not constitute temporary shelter, but rather creates imposed population enclaves in which entire communities are subjected to management and control instead of being treated as individuals entitled to freedom of movement, residence, and life in their original communities, the group added. Euromed warned that engineering units responsible for the plan have already begun preparing designs for the first experimental city in Rafah, pending the securing of funding to begin implementation on the ground. Quote, life within these temporary cities would be subject to arbitrary security control and externally imposed governance arrangements, leaving residents with no genuine choice to accept or reject them and denying them any role in managing their public affairs. This entrenches a new political and administrative reality that places the future of the Gaza Strip, the identity of its residents, and their right to self-determination on their land under direct threat due to external interference. UN spokesperson Stéphane Dujarric, expressing an international legal official's version of thoughts and prayers, responded to Zamir's vision of a new boundary line inside Gaza, saying, quote, we firmly stand against any change of the borders of Gaza and Israel, and that Zamir's statement, quote, seems to me to go against the spirit and the letter of the Trump peace plan. A brutal winter storm has hit Gaza, plunging hundreds of thousands of families into further crisis 26 months into Israel's genocide. And the blockade of essential humanitarian aid, food, fuel, medicine, medical supplies, and infrastructure and construction materials remains firmly in place amid a lack of any meaningful international political pressure. 1 8-month-old baby, Rahaf Abu Jazar, died of exposure to cold after water gathered in her family's tent in Khan Yunis amid the heavy rainfall, Al Jazeera reported. Ismail Al-Tawabta of the Gaza Government Media Office said that nearly 300,000 families are without shelter as the storm bears down. Roughly 250,000 tents and mobile homes were supposed to enter Gaza, Al-Tawabta said. But there are currently 6,000 trucks loaded with aid stuck at the crossings, he told Al Jazeera on Wednesday. Quote, we are issuing an urgent appeal to the world, U.S. President Trump and the United Nations Security Council to pressure the Israeli occupation, he added. Gaza's civil defense rescue workers say that its teams are receiving distress calls from Palestinians inside displacement camps, reporting flooding tents and families trapped inside by heavy rains. Quote, despite limited resources and a lack of necessary equipment, our teams are working tirelessly to reach those in need and provide assistance within the available means, the civil defense stated. On Thursday, civil defense reported that three buildings have already collapsed in Gaza City due to the flooding and strong winds. The Gaza government media office stated on Tuesday that with the storm bringing flooding and strong winds, Palestinians in Gaza are experiencing, quote, a recurring tragic scenario where thousands of families will face the risk of drowning, collapses, and flooding. The coming hours will document heartbreaking scenes of families struggling to survive inside tents that cannot withstand the rain or wind, amidst a shameful international silence and the absence of any serious intervention to provide even the most basic protection and relief for the displaced. Quote, we hold the Israeli occupation fully responsible for exposing displaced persons to the dangers of the climate, given its closure of crossings and its prevention of the entry of relief and shelter materials, including 300,000 tents and mobile homes, in addition to the absence of alternative shelters. This perpetuates the denial of hundreds of thousands of their right to safe housing under international humanitarian law, the media office added. Turning to the occupied West Bank, a 17-year-old child was killed by Israeli forces on December 6th in Al-Khalil, or Hebron, in the south. Defense for Children International Palestine, or DCIP, reported that Ahmed Khalil Rajabi, quote, was driving his family's car to visit a friend at Alia Governmental Hospital in the city center, during which Israeli forces alleged that Ahmed attempted to run over a soldier. Israeli forces opened fire on the vehicle, killing Ahmed. The soldiers then confiscated his body. DCIP said that, according to their investigation, as he left the hospital to visit his friend, Ahmed approached a checkpoint and saw soldiers stationed across from it. The soldiers yelled at Ahmed to stop when he was beside them in the second lane. The vehicle moved past the soldiers for several meters before Ahmed halted and backed up no more than 5 meters, when the soldiers immediately began shooting at the car, causing the car to slide. One of the soldiers attempted to open the driver's door, and as the car skidded, the front driver's side hit him. He then joined the other 5 soldiers in shooting at the vehicle. The car kept slowly reversing, swerving slightly downhill. At that point, an older man, a sanitation worker in the Hebron municipality, was hit by the barrage of bullets fired toward the car. The vehicle eventually stopped in the middle of the road, where the soldiers continued to fire at the car, killing Ahmed. An ambulance arrived, but soldiers fired toward it, preventing it from reaching either Ahmed in the car or the injured sanitation worker. A large number of Israeli army and police units arrived later. At first, the Israeli military stated that a speeding vehicle had opened fire on soldiers. They later withdrew that claim and issued a new one, claiming instead that the soldiers had shot at a car that attempted to run them over, DCIP stated. Ayed Abu Aktesh, the accountability program director at DCIP, said, quote, there is no rule of law for Palestinian children. Palestinian families are left to piece together how their child was killed, and in many cases are denied even the basic dignity of burying them, as Israel continues to withhold children's bodies in violation of international law. Israeli forces and settlers have killed 53 Palestinian children in the occupied West Bank in 2025, according to documentation collected by Defense for Children International Palestine. Israeli forces have withheld the bodies of at least 61 Palestinian children since June 2016, DCIP says. 6 of the children's bodies have since been released to their families, while 55 Palestinian children's bodies remain withheld by Israeli authorities. In the village of Kariut near Nablus in the northern West Bank, Israeli soldiers used heavy machinery to uproot olive trees this week during the harvest season. Journalist Issam Ramawi captured footage of the bulldozers destroying the olive groves belonging to village elders in Kariut on December 8th. The Tel Aviv newspaper Haaretz reported that the military destroyed hundreds of trees in an area that the army claims exceeds the boundaries set by a military order, citing security measures and signed by the army's West Bank commander. Village council members said that the soldiers are also destroying wells, not only the trees. The roots of the trees were severed, the village council members said, and the owners could not reach them and attempt to rescue them. The council said that the military threatened residents that they would also destroy their houses if anyone tried to approach the trees. Meanwhile, in occupied Jerusalem, Israeli police and municipal officers raided the headquarters of the United Nations Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA, on December 8th, cutting communications, seizing items, and replacing the UN flag with Israel's flag. This is the latest escalation of attacks against the agency, which was established in the wake of Israel's seizure and theft of Palestine by Zionist militias and the expulsion of approximately 800,000 Palestinians in 1948. UNRWA has not used the building since the beginning of the year after Israeli authorities ordered the agency to vacate all of its premises and halt operations, Al Jazeera reported. The agency's chief, Philippe Lazzarini, said that this latest attack on the agency follows, quote, months of harassment that included arson attacks in 2024, hateful demonstrations and intimidation, supported by a large-scale disinformation campaign, as well as anti-UNRWA legislation passed by the Israeli parliament in breach of its international obligations. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight Paying a High Price in Gaza by Khaled Al-Kershali, writing from Gaza. I wake up at 7 a.m. and immediately head outside to the street to check our water supplies, Khaled writes. In front of the warehouse where my family lives are our three buckets. Only half of one of them is filled with water, and I know I will need to replenish our supply. I wash my face and start to walk over to the school next door to see if a water shipment has come. Along the way, I see my neighbor Fayaz Shabbat, and he tells me that the water shipment did not come. During the week, only one water shipment came. I return to the warehouse where my father, mother, brother, and I have been displaced since February in Deir Abalah in southern Gaza. My mother is awake, kneading dough. I ask her what she wants from the market, and she asks me in turn what I want to eat. We ate canned meat yesterday, I say, so it is better to eat something cheaper today. It has been a while since we last ate rice, so she asked me to try and find 1 kilo of rice. My grandmother is listening to us, so I ask her if she wants anything from the market for my grandfather. She asks me to bring tomatoes, if there are any, and to only bring 4 or 5, as 1 kilogram costs around $50. I put on my sewn slippers and head to the market. My grandfather Ahmad, who is 82, sits in his wheelchair in a shaded area of the street. I say good morning to him and continue walking. After 5 minutes of walking, I pass by a neighborhood that has been completely destroyed. I pass by the ruins of a building where a massacre was committed by the Israeli occupation against the Al-Hawajri family. On a wall near the massacre site is a message written in red. Jude is under the rubble, 31 October, 2023. God is sufficient for me, and he is the best disposer of affairs. Jude has since been pulled out from the rubble, though, as another message on the wall tells us this much. 20 meters from the massacre, I enter the spice shop, and I ask the seller for the spices and the rice. The shop is crowded. The shopkeeper creates and mixes his own spice mixtures, and they are popular. When he gives me what I ordered, I ask him to give me his phone number to transfer the money to his Bank of Palestine account. I pay $4. I go to a grocery store on the other side of the street. Adel Oda, the owner of the shop, accepted online payments during the famine. I greet Adel and look for onion, garlic, tomatoes, and green pepper, but I do not find any. When I ask Adel about it, he says that no vegetables have entered the strip yet. I exit the store and walk for 20 minutes until I reach Al-Bahasi Market. I go there because, at one time, I could find everything I needed in that market, but this time I cannot find all that I need. The place is crowded with people, most of them paying with their bank accounts as well. I pay $11 for a kilo of rice and $1 for ice cream. I exit the market and walk rapidly for half an hour in search of the vegetables. By 8:30 a.m., I have reached Al Birka Crossroads, where I know a vegetable seller who will accept a bank payment. The man tells me that tomatoes are non-existent in the market and that the prices of onions and garlic have skyrocketed again. He also does not have green pepper. I have around $37 cash in my wallet. I go to a grocery store on the other side of the street and buy less than 200 grams of green pepper for $5, garlic for $5, and one small onion for $10. Then I return to the warehouse and give my mother what I've bought. Those are excerpts from Paying a High Price in Gaza by Khaled Al-Kershali, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Gaza and around the world. In the Shati, or beach refugee camp west of Gaza City, on December 7th, Palestinians celebrated the Palestine football team's qualification to the quarterfinals of the 2025 Arab Cup. Journalist Aboud Abu Salama took photographs of people watching the match in a crowded room huddled around a television. He writes, quote, "Gathered closely around a small screen, Gaza residents watched the Arab Cup football match between the Palestinian national team and its Syrian counterpart. Despite the harsh living conditions in the Al-Shati refugee camp, this shared moment of sports brings a brief sense of unity and escape amid ongoing hardship." That's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.
You're listening to Arab Voices, a syndicated radio talk show on dozens of radio stations in the US and Europe since 2002. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. The Gaza Tribunal, an independent international initiative investigating war crimes and acts of genocide committed by apartheid Israel in the Gaza Strip, held its final session in Istanbul, Turkey, in October 2025, an event that lasted 4 days and was full of great speakers, testimonies, experts speaking about the genocide in Gaza. I had aired previously on this program some of the remarks delivered at the different stages and sessions of the Gaza Tribunal held in different countries over the past year, and I'm going to air now two more remarks delivered at the final session. We will listen to the remarks of Professor Lana Tatour on Zionist settler colonization and racism in Palestine. Professor Tatour is a senior lecturer in global development at the University of New South Wales, who works on settler colonialism, indigeneity, race, citizenship, human rights, and Middle East with a focus on Palestine and Israel. I will also air the remarks of Jeff Halper on crimes against Palestinian people, indicting Zionist settler colonialism. Halper is the director of the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions. Let's listen in.
In the 10 minutes I have, I will address specifically the topic of the relationship between Zionism, race, and racism. There is a consensus in the international human rights community that Israel's actions in Gaza amount to genocide. Reports were issued by human rights organizations such as Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, Ilhaq, B'Tselem, and others, as well as by UN Special Rapporteurs and the UN Independent Commission of Inquiry on Palestine. Genocide studies experts have also determined that Israel is committing genocide. This is, of course, a welcome recognition. However, while these reports and statements acknowledge the genocide and address the dehumanization of Palestinians as core element of it, they do not address Zionism as a form of racism, nor do they name and recognize Zionism as the racial ideology that drives the colonization of Palestine and the genocide in Gaza. This omission, I believe, is something that the jury should take note of and rectify. For 2 years, we have been witnessing the annihilation of Gaza. As Israel announced its genocidal campaign, Israeli officials, including at the highest levels of government, have called for a second Nakba, describing the Palestinians in Gaza as human animals, the children of darkness, monsters, Amalek to be eliminated from infant to the elderly, and evil, and I'm quoting, to be uprooted so that there will be good for the entire region and the world. Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, declared that the war on Gaza is a battle of civilization against barbarism. These statements are not aberration, nor are they momentary responses to trauma, as often portrayed in the West. They draw on over a century of racialization of Palestinians by the Zionist movement and imperial powers. The Balfour Declaration and its denial of the existence of Palestinians as a people with right to self-determination. The partition plan, the British mandate, the Nakba as a series of events and as an ongoing structure. The mass expulsion of Palestinians. Their denial of their right to return in the name of demographic considerations. The occupation of additional Palestinian territories in 67, the siege on Gaza, the genocide, land dispossession, entrenched system of checkpoints and segregated roads, the mass incarceration of Palestinians, the discrimination against Palestinians with Israeli citizenship, they all rely on the treatment of Palestinians as less civilized, as an inferior race, as lesser humans. Racism, racialization, and racial classification and hierarchization are core to the Zionist movement, ideology, and practice. The colonial project in Palestine is also racial and racist. Any reading of the Israeli genocide in Gaza should take into consideration how Zionism emerged as part of an imperial, colonial, and racial history, speaking to imperial order and aspirations, and building on 19th century European conceptions of race. Western imperialism and racism, of which Zionism is part, rendered territories and lands belonging to 9 white peoples, including the Palestinians, available for invasion, exploitation, and settlement. As put by Edward Said, imperialism was the theory, colonialism the practice. Moreover, Zionism was not antagonistic to colonialism, nor to the idea of race itself. On the contrary, Zionists built on and benefited from both. Race was central to the Zionist mission of establishing Jews as a nation and the people, not just a religious group. Furthermore, Zionist leaders themselves described the movement as one of colonial settlement, an extension of European imperialism, bringing civilization and modernization to the Orient. Theodore Herzl talked about the Jewish state as an outpost of civilization as opposed to barbarism. The idea was that while Jews are inferior race in Europe, in Palestine, they are racially superior to Palestinians. And if Palestinians are an inferior race, then they are not deserving of self-determination, sovereignty. Their national aspirations can be ignored and they can be expelled, transferred, removed, killed, and their land taken. Already in 1965, Fayez Sayer wrote that racial elimination stands at the heart of the Zionist project since its inception. The Zionist quest for eliminating Palestinians is now taking one of its most brutal form, the genocide in Gaza. Israel has destroyed all means that sustain human life and has made Gaza unlivable. The annihilation of Gaza has been justified, supported, facilitated, and carried by Western powers, Western media, and corporations. It relies on anti-Arab, anti-Muslim, and anti-Palestinian racism, and on the attribution of more value to Jewish life while disregarding Palestinian life. It is this deep-seated racism that allows this genocide to continue despite it being live-streamed. In Gaza, we see the treatment of Palestinians not just as less than humans, but also as non-human. Israelis are dancing in parties, social gatherings, and weddings, and exercising to songs that call to exterminate Palestinians with genocidal lyrics, such as, "May your village burn." Israeli civilians are actively blocking and destroying food and medical supplies intended for the people in Gaza. They are picnicking with their families at sites where they can watch the bombing of Gaza as a form of entertainment. They protest for the right to rape Palestinians, and Israeli parliament debates the legitimacy of raping Palestinians. Israelis relish on TikTok videos of killed and starved Palestinians, taking pleasure from watching dogs eating bodies of dead Palestinians that were never allowed to be respectfully buried. Soldiers make videos of themselves wearing lingerie of Palestinian women, mocking them, and playing with toys that once belonged to kids, now either displaced or killed. What we are witnessing in Gaza is race at work. It is Zionism at work. On 10th of November 2025, 2 weeks from now, we will be marking 50 years to Resolution 3379, which determined that Zionism is a form of racism and racial discrimination. Unfortunately, in 1991, the PLO agreed to rescind the resolution, one of the greatest achievements we had, simply as a precondition to enter the negotiations that led to the Oslo Accords. 50 years later, the genocide in Gaza and Israel's ongoing colonization and apartheid in Palestine demonstrate the need to recenter the conversation on the racial and racist nature of the Zionist colonial project. As Nouran Rekat powerfully writes, and I'm quoting, "Understanding the racial dimension of the Palestinian struggle for freedom, including that Zionism is a form of racism and racial discrimination, is work that is still ongoing, on the ground and in scholarship. It remains our unfinished business," end of quote. International institutions and the human rights community still insist on reading genocide, as well as apartheid, as divorced from Zionism. Even when they acknowledge racial domination and Jewish supremacy, they do not recognize Zionism as their source. It remains the unspoken taboo. Justice and accountability for Palestinians demand that we address this. Settler colonialism, apartheid, and genocide do not exist outside the grammar of race. which in Palestine is the grammar of Zionism. I call the jury to address Zionism as a colonial project and a form of racism in their consideration of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Thank you.
I'll just wait and see if the jurors have any questions. Christine, you have a question.
Thank you very much for that very powerful presentation. The concept of Zionism as a colonial racist ideology, dating from at least the 19th century European views of colonialism, is clear. But in so many other areas, we've moved on, and we have a more modernist, contemporary understanding of racism and have rejected racism in so many areas. So why have we got this continuity? Why has it persisted in this way for over 100 and however many years it is now? I mean, it's a difficult question, but have you any thoughts at all as to why that is the case?
I actually really need to think about it, but I mean, race and racism exist. These kind of intersections between imperialism, race, and racism are still apparent globally and in the international system and international law. I think what the genocide in Gaza has really emphasized is that we are able to see the racial and racist roots from the origin, their origins from 19th century in such strong way today, and seeing how it has never actually ended. And it is because it goes back to, Zionism and settler colonialism in Palestine being still as strong as it was decades ago and over a century ago. And the perception in Israel that the Zionist project is unfinished business, because Palestinians have not been eliminated, because the territory has not been taken in full. And in Gaza, with the annihilation, and the attempts to justify the annihilation, we saw this kind of crude racial discourses and frameworks and conceptions put at play in a very visible way and without any shame. What is more striking is not the Israeli discourses, maybe not striking but disappointing, but actually seeing the impunity with which Israel is operating, which again speaks to the deep anti-Palestinian racism and to the less value of life that is giving to Palestinians. Thank you.
Thank you, Lana.
Thank you, Professor Tatour. And now it's time to hear Mr. Jeff Halper, Crimes Against Palestinian People, Indicting Zionist Settler Colonialism, is subject that Mr. Jeff Halper will be speaking about.
My name is Jeff Halper. I'm the director of ICAD, an Israeli-based anti-colonial organization dedicated to resisting the Israeli demolition of Palestinian homes, the Zionist colonization of Palestine, and for establishing a shared democracy between the river and the sea. I'm here in my capacity as an expert on the crimes of house demolitions and settler colonialism. In the few minutes I have, I'll address specifically the need for the tribunal to look up from the specific areas of crime being committed by Israel in Gaza in order to hold accountable the very system, Zionist settler colonialism, that spawns those crimes. The crimes of which Israel is accused, from plausible genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity, to specific and myriad violations of the Fourth Geneva Convention and the International Convention on the Suppression and Punishment of the Crime of Apartheid, among others, cannot be addressed only as crimes in and of themselves. for justice to be advanced and to ensure that these crimes never happen again, the political and ideological system from which they emerge must also be dismantled. This was recognized, in a way, when the UN General Assembly adopted the Zionism is Racism resolution in 1975, although that wasn't an operational resolution, but merely declarative, and it was repealed, unfortunately, in 1991. The verdict regarding Israel's operations in Gaza must relate not only to specific criminal policies and actions, but also then to the criminal system that spawned them. Zionism's very purpose, to Judaize Palestine, by definition, violates the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination as guaranteed in the UN Charter. The principle that all peoples have an inalienable right to complete freedom, sovereignty, and territorial integrity has risen to a point of customary law. Settler colonialism, however, isn't a concept with a clear and adjudicable definition that can be applied in international law, like, for example, occupation or apartheid. This weakens the ability to apply international law to cases of settler colonialism. I would therefore like to shift the focus of the accusations from the crimes this tribunal is considering to the broader illegal colonial system of Zionism, which gives rise to them. Settler colonialism, in both its ancient and modern forms, is a form of colonization in which settlers arrive in another country with the intent of taking it over. It can arise out of nationalist ideology, as in the case of Zionism, or as a policy of grabbing and integrating territory, as in the Sinification of Tibet, the Iraqi attempt to Arabize Kurdistan, or the Russification of Eastern Europe. Whatever the steps taken by the settlers, they follow a similar pattern. Displace or eliminate the indigenous population, take control of its lands, replace the native population with the settler one, which a process which in Zionism is known as Judaization, and ultimately to normalize the new country. In the case of Zionism, to normalize the transformation of Palestine into Israel, in the image of the settlers themselves. This process then disappears the indigenous population. Palestine and Palestinians are disappeared, and the settlers become the new indigenous population. Genocide, cultural and physical, is therefore built into the settler project. As the Zionist leader and former prime minister Moshe Sharet said as far back as 1914, we have not come to an empty land to inherit it. We have come to conquer a country from a people inhabiting it that governs it by virtue of its language and savage culture. So the flip side of Judaization is de-Arabization. Already in 1937, David Ben-Gurion, who was a vocal proponent of compulsory and total transfer, established a committee on population transfer within the Jewish Agency. This is a decade before the partition, of Palestine by the UN. And the whole idea of transfer was given its best expression by Joseph Weitz, who was the director of the Jewish National Fund's Land Settlement Department before 48. And he was the driving force behind the expulsions of 1948 when he declared, "It must be clear that there is no room in the country for both peoples. The only solution is a land of Israel without Arabs. There is no way but to transfer the Arabs from here to the neighboring countries, to transfer all of them, perhaps with the exception of Bethlehem, Nazareth, and Old Jerusalem. Not one village must be left, not one tribe, in the words of Joseph Weitz. Now, the initial transfer actually took place during the course of the Nakba, of course, in 1948, when Israel expelled about 750,000 Palestinians, more than half the population, the Palestinian population, and 85% of the Palestinians that were inhabiting what became the State of Israel. The transfer repeated itself in 1967, when between 280,000 and 325,000 Palestinians were driven from the West Bank, Gaza, and the Golan Heights, as Israeli military violence was directed at the civilian population, including the demolition of population centers and the emptying of refugee camps by the Israeli army. And today, in the wake of its genocidal operations in Gaza, again, genocide and ethnic cleansing being part of the process of Judaization, Israel is openly negotiating with a number of countries, including South Sudan, Ethiopia, Libya, and Indonesia, to accept all or most of Gaza's 2.3 million people. This is an active campaign on the part of Israel today. This isn't just some idea in the air. In collaboration with the Trump administration, Israel's presented detailed plans for the redevelopment of Gaza, virtually devoid of its current inhabitants. The seizure of Palestinian lands is easily documented in maps. Since 1947, Israel has been awarded 56% of Palestine by the UN partition plan. It's conquered another 22% of Palestine in 1948. The Green Line that accepts internationally those conquests and the partition is now codified into what we call the Green Line, which has become de facto the border of Israel. And it's established full military control over the entire occupied territory. It's also annexed de facto Area C of the West Bank, the 62% of the West Bank, that today houses 800,000 settlers in more than 300 illegal settlements. 90% of the 6.7 million Palestinian residents of historic Palestine between the river and the sea are today confined by Israeli military and planning policies to 12% of their homeland. Comprised, net 12% is comprised of some 170 disconnected enclaves. The loss of their country, their lands, and attempts to erase their culture and their very presence from Palestine compels the Palestinians to resist. And since resistance is therefore built into settler colonialism, Zionism cannot achieve its goals, normalizing its violent Judaization of Palestine, without pacification, without breaking all Palestinian resistance. That is the political background and the purpose behind the assault on Gaza. Pacification. Eliminating all resistance among an entire population must by necessity then shade into genocide. The principle of distinction between combatants and non-combatants, fundamental to the rules of warfare, can't be obeyed if the entire colonized population is engaged in resistance. Even non-violent resistance, like building homes on one's own land without a permit. But because the native population must be displaced and pacified for the settler project to succeed, Israel can't refrain from committing war crimes and crimes against humanity. All this compels the tribunal, in my view, to hold the very system of Zionist settler colonialism accountable, in the understanding that the system is illegal in international law by its very nature and purpose, and the fact that it is the source of the crimes the tribunal is investigating. I appeal to the members of the jury to do so. In addition, as the head of ICAD, I call on the members of the jury to address the issue that while democide, herbicide, and scholasticide are all aspects of cultural genocide itself is excluded from the Genocide Convention, which only recognizes physical genocide. Since the Nakba, Israel's demolished almost 500,000 Palestinian homes, schools, universities, libraries, museums, mosques, churches, commercial centers, markets, and farm buildings. We urge the international community to expand the Genocide Convention so that it includes all these crimes as well.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
What you just heard were the remarks of Lana Tatur, Senior Lecturer in Global Development at the University of New South Wales, followed by the remarks of Jeff Halper, Director of the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions. They were speaking at the Gaza Tribunal final session held in Istanbul, Turkey, in October 2025. More information about the Gaza Tribunal is at www.gazatribunal.com. You've been listening to Arab Voices, a syndicated radio talk show on dozens of radio stations in the US and Europe since 2002. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.